Hello and welcome to episode 157 of the Talking Talkie podcast. I am joined this evening by Tom Beddoes. How are you, Tom?
Hello, good evening. Very well, thank you. Yourself?
I'm good. I'm good. I think I'm feeling a lot more relaxed about things than
Yes.
I was this time last week. We are going to talk about the most recent two games to start with, starting with, let's face it, a pretty abysmal day out at Bath for you, Tom.
Well, the day out was reasonably good. Bath is a very lovely place to visit. Has some cracking pubs. And it's an all-round good was a good day in terms of the sunshine of things. It was ruined by the kicking off of Torquay United versus Bath at 3 o'clock, and went downhill from there. But other than that, it was a very good day.
It does seem to be the situation as a Torquay United fan. It's a good day out ruined by some football.
Yes, it's been a recurring theme for the entire season.
I think up until Tuesday we'd won four away games, something stupid like that. I wasn't at the game, obviously, because the commute would have been a nightmare. But I did have the misfortune of listening to most of it on the radio. It sounded as dire as it usually is. Was that the sense at the ground?
Yeah, it was highly frustrating, I think, for the 700 plus fans that had trudged up into Bath. But it was a performance of, I mean, it was a poor game all round, really, from both teams. Bath didn't offer too much to threaten us, but they just found the way through, and I just like get the single goal that they needed to. It felt quite that there was just a lack of passion and a lack of fight from the Torquay players for the vast majority of the game. We weren't creating anything that kind of looked as if we were going to take either get an equaliser or take a lead, and it was kind of it became quite a, I wouldn't say toxic, it's probably a bit too far, but it wasn't a particularly great atmosphere around with the chanting and going back to the players and the shouting. But it was well, kind of, what's the word? Well, kind of expected and well, kind of to do, because it was deserved for that atmosphere to be there, because the players really weren't putting in a performance that you would have thought after the day before being deducted another point, which put us into the real kind of shit show of a performance for for relegation threatened Torquay kind of thing. So it was quite kind of disheartening to see that. You kind of thought, okay, we've had another point, which is for a mistake that has been made, and the admin, we can that's we're not we're just going to pass over that because it's pure incompetence and we move on. But it was you kind of thought, okay, right, that's happened, let's come into today, let's get a good result out away at Bath. We've got a good number of people here, and let's try and secure our safety on the afternoon kind of thing. And unfortunately that wasn't really the case
It, it's
for the
it's
end.
been a hallmark of the season. That's not meant to be a pun, Asa. Of the season that we go away and we are terrible. Like, I don't really recall too many times where we did well away from home. I think the first 20 minutes at Dorking on the first day, things were looking very exciting, and then
Dover.
suddenly remembered. Oh, I always get those. Did I say Dorking?
You do
I was
say
watching a
Dorking,
video about Mark White earlier. Oh, God, we're going to leave that in because I think people need to know my incompetence. At Dover, things went downhill there, and then since then, we've won a couple of games away from home that we absolutely did not deserve to win. I think St Albans was one early on in the season, and it's indicative of the malaise that seems to have stricken the club for, probably for 2 years plus. The goal went in, and I was like, well, I guess we've lost that game. And I did stick with it for a little while longer, but then I think I don't know if I have the mental capacity to stick it out, even on the radio. And that's a shame. I mean, again, I had said before the pod listeners that I would mention the 1 point deduction and then promptly forgot. So I do thank Tom for helping me out of that particular hole. But Ross Marshall played in a game for which he was apparently ineligible due to suspension. I think it was a Weymouth game. I don't know who's responsible for that. It used to be in the olden days the club secretary. I don't know if we have a club secretary anymore. I
We've got
wouldn't
one
know who
listed
the
on.
individual is. A name has been bandied about, but I think the name concerned is a name that people don't like, so it's too easy to blame
Yeah.
on them. So we're not going to mention that name. May do later on, of course. But having that point deducted then meant that we were under more pressure to perform in two away games, which,
Yeah.
as we said, we have not been able to do. The previous week, we were lucky with other results around us. Last Saturday, everything went against us.
Yeah.
So I don't want to dwell on Bath because it seemed like, I should say, 712 people going to Bath, in
It's
the
fantastic.
National League South when your bottom six
Yeah.
is incredible. And I don't want to, every club has a great fan base, right? Except maybe Dover. But and possibly Truro and Taunton,
Bournemouth.
Pembroke, Boreham, and Notts County. But anyway, most clubs have a good fan base. But I think it's something that we've highlighted over the years on this podcast and other podcasts which are available. Considering our home attendances, our away attendances are tremendous. Not only in number, but in passion and commitment, because really, who wants to go to Maidstone? People in
Yeah.
Maidstone don't want to go to
No.
Maidstone. And we can speak about the demographics of Torbay and South Devon as to why people move away. I've moved away
So have
lots,
I.
so has Tom. So have most people who do the podcast.
Yeah.
But I think it shows you that there is still very much a desire for a functioning football club. And we haven't had one of those for quite some time. So, with that said, that was Bath. I couldn't tell you who scored for Bath. I couldn't
No
really
idea.
tell you if we had any chances. I vaguely remember Ash running around and perhaps falling over when someone looked in.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think we actually had a shot on target, to be honest. I don't really recall. And I haven't gone back to watch the highlights because I just couldn't be bothered, to be completely honest.
I did watch him on Sunday. I mean, I think highlights was a very optimistic word to use. But let's move on to something that was a bit more fun, and that was Taunton away on Tuesday. Not Monday, as some of us thought it would be because of the confusion with the Truro game, and therefore decided to go to the office on the Tuesday and did not watch the streaming as a result. However, my co-host here, Tom, did watch the game. And what were your impressions of the evening, really?
Well, firstly, the stream actually worked and didn't glitch through the whole 90 minutes, so that's a big plus. I'm very surprised about that. Secondly, I think a complete contrast to Saturday's performance in that the players came out, they looked hungry for a result, they looked eager to get forward, creating chances and trying to give a positive kind of atmosphere to the, again, I don't know what the actual attendance was on Tuesday, but 800, 900 Torquay fans. It's a little bit closer than Bath, I think, Taunton, but yeah, it's just a much, much more improved result. And as you've just alluded to it, an away game where we've showed what a Torquay United side should be doing. Unfortunately, it came on the last away game of the bloody season. But and McGavin Worldie took us into the lead, as he's found his way to do. His showreel from this season, I mean, it's going to be quite something. I don't think it's going to show maybe his full footballing ability, but he can score a worldie when he wants to. So yeah, that took us into the lead, and it kind of followed up quite quickly by Asa Hall nodding in. There was a bit of, I didn't quite see the goal. I wasn't paying too much attention to the screen at the time, but I think it was a bit of a jump around between heads within the box, and Asa Hall managed to nod it in to the back of the net. So that was took us to a kind of a safety. That isn't true, no.
No, it was a corner and he volleyed it straight from the corner.
Oh, I see. I wasn't paying attention. I thought
Yeah.
yeah, maybe that was another part of
It
the
was
game,
actually a
but
really nice finish. I mean, normally with Hall at corners, you expect it to be his head, but He scored a few with his feet. I mean, he's, you know, been playing for 77 years, so you'd think he would have. But actually, it was a really nice full volley from the corner, which was, I mean, the marking was terrible. It was, if that was a goal that we'd conceded, we have conceded it, number one, but we would be livid at the lack of marking. He starts deep in the box, kind of like on the opposite corner of the box from where the corner's being taken, and runs almost to the opposite corner on the 6-yard box and volleys it in from about there.
Wow.
And
maybe, like, the stream did glitch.
Yeah. I mean, it was nice to be two goals up, and McGavin scored again. As you say, he's a talented footballer. He just isn't an athlete, I think it's fair to say. And even at this level, you have to have some level of athleticism. I think he would flourish in a team that had two people to protect him, two Tom Lapsleys, although that's a terrifying thought. Or maybe it's not. Maybe that's your jam, in which case, how about it? But having gone 2-0 up, our first thought would have been, let's get to halftime.
Yeah.
Which we did, because we haven't so far. Mm. And then we were like, oh, good, we've got to halftime. Let's just spend the first 10 minutes of the second half feeling things out. Let's not, for example, concede a stupid goal from a set piece within 2 minutes of the restart.
Yeah.
And that's what we did.
Exactly what we did, yeah. It's just been a repeat of a few games this season where the other team has come out almost instantly with a quick goal, and then everyone drops their heads and you go, here we go again, kind of thing. But I think it was quite a dogged second half, wasn't it? We managed to kind of keep them out without really creating too much of an opportunity for us, but doing well enough to stop them from taking advantage of the drop in play from us, kind of stuff. But I'm not entirely sure how on earth we got to 12 minutes added on. That was the longest 12 minutes of my life.
Head injuries, I think.
Collins went down, didn't he?
But, yeah. I mean, welcome back, Collins. I think he spent more time walking on and walking off the field than he did actually performing. But head injuries, you can't really mess around with, so that's fine. I don't think anybody felt when that goal did go in that we would hold out for 55 minutes more. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fair to say they pleasantly surprised us. Yeah. And when I heard that there were 12 minutes, I was listening on the radio at that point, and 12 minutes, and the radio commentator said, I think there's going to be 11 minutes here. I was like, no. And then there was 12. I don't think anybody in that ground for 1 minute thought it was going to finish 2-1.
No.
I think it's worth pointing out a couple of the players who I felt did well. Mm-hmm. Certainly on the radio commentary that I heard too, as well as the highlights. I think Ethan Archer deserves a huge amount of credit, not just in that game, but in most of his appearances, he has seemed a very willing player. At a time when a lot of his more experienced cohorts seem to shy away from the ball and seem to be risk averse, which is ironic considering the risks we put ourselves in. He has made an effort, and I think that's, I don't know what his situation is moving forward, but I would be happy if he was somebody who was around in the future.
Definitely, yeah. He's kind of stepped in, coming from Three Bridges, I think. I don't know what league they're in. I don't know if it's a step below or two steps below or something, but he's come in and has kind of shown that he's got an appetite to want to play football, and has probably shown up a couple of our other players by coming in January time.
I think it was January, February. Remember. Yeah, it was not before Christmas for sure. So, no. And to your point, there are some of the players we've had this season who have shown no interest in playing football, even at a professional level. Again, not really fair to name names because I don't know what's going on. But I feel like some of our more expensive acquisitions perhaps could have done a little bit more this season. Again, that's a conversation for another day. I also thought it's probably worth mentioning Holstead for once in a positive way, because I felt the goal against Bath, he was culpable a little bit for it. It seemed like on the replay, it seemed like it's gone straight through him, which has happened several times. But with backs to the wall on a Tuesday evening, he did come out for plenty of crosses and claim them convincingly and distribute the ball. And I think at our level, that's what you need a guy to do.
Yeah.
So it was nice that he did his job. And I'm not trying to denigrate what he's been doing for the past couple of years, but at times, being a goalkeeper doesn't seem to be a thing with which Halstead has had a passing familiarity. So, and with the caveat that he also hasn't had a defence all year.
Yes, yeah.
You know, our defence has been abject since before the season started, and we knew it and didn't fix it.
No, but as a keeper, he's again. This probably get we go into more of a player kind of situation after the season's finished. But as a keeper, he isn't a particularly vocal person. So normally, when not normally, but in other teams, you'd hear a command or some direction coming from the back, and that hasn't been the case for this season, and it's probably not helped by that. As you said, there hasn't been competent defenders in front of him to be able to give a direction, and they will actually complete it. So that may be why that hasn't been happening. But yeah, I think Mark kept us in that game on Tuesday, and thankfully he did. And ensured our safety in the National League South. Who thought we'd be saying that?
Yeah, I think when we started this season, most of us were thinking we'd get out of the National League South. We just were looking upwards rather than downwards. I think the past couple of games have shown that someone like Asa Hall can be a huge influence back there, even if he's not necessarily an actual defender. And perhaps Halstead is someone who needs the leader on the field in front of him because he doesn't want to be himself. But again, I felt it was important to highlight his contribution to the Taunton game because, believe me, I've been quick to jump on him at times. And when I've jumped on him, he's dropped me. So so what that meant was that we were safe. We are safe. We're 6 points ahead of Taunton. They have two games to play. They are playing this evening as we record this. But because they play Hemel Hempstead on the last day, they can't both get enough points to pass us, which means that we are safe. Which I think for everyone is a massive relief. And if you're like me, Tom, you'd have been like, thank fuck for that. Let's forget about the season, never speak of it again, and look forward to the future.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a horrible, horrible season, and I'm very glad to be done with it, to be clear.
I mean, there were some good days out. Bath, you say, is a lovely town.
Yes.
Twerton Park, not so much, I would imagine.
No, probably very interesting ground. In
the league, though, right?
No, not the worst ground. I mean, Braintree was pretty poor. I mean, when we looked over the top of the away terrace to the back of us, was just a wasteland of rubbish and fly tipping and whatever else. That was interesting. But yeah. Stansted were playing Essex.
Yeah. I think a wasteland of fly tipping can be like Essex's official motto. My mum's from Essex. There's no Essex welcome in this podcast.
Jules also won't be happy with that because he is from Essex. So,
Well, that's fine. I don't care. So we're going to move on from the season, hopefully, you know, figuratively and literally, because the main question hanging over the club these past few weeks has been who's going to own the club. We're at the phase now where there has been a preferred bidder involved. We don't necessarily know who that is. Some names are going to be bandied around, which I will get to. But first, I'm going to mention the latest update from Companies House about Riviera Stadium Limited.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's very interesting. The last statement, and I forget the exact phrase, was after the property developers supporting the club pulled out, Clark Osborne had to withdraw. And I'm paraphrasing that. That's not the exact phrase. So as we all suspected, it was a grift to build some property. And presumably, Osborne or whoever reported back to his corporate overlords that the council were not being as cooperative or, let's face it, as easy as they may have suspected at the beginning, and they pulled the plug. So hopefully we'll never see hide nor hair of him again. Will we see Mr. Edwards and Ms. Heyman back at the helm? Who knows? Because they seem to be a pair of names that keep getting mentioned whenever this preferred bidder is brought up. I find that unlikely. But with the swirl of rumor going around right now, it's almost like it wouldn't surprise me if anybody's going to show up with a big bag of
No.
cash.
I would be quite worried if they are hanging around, clinging on for the next in within the next regime of ownership. I think it kind of I'm not going to say that I've said enough before on my thoughts on them on the two of them, but I think that their time is done with the club, and we need a complete clean slate of management, ownership, players, all of it, and move forwards positively. So hopefully this preferred bidder is of someone with a mindset of the same mindset and has people who know football and know how to run, also know how to run a business, because that's essentially what we are, and that hasn't been the case
No,
before.
I mean, I will just mention those two quickly before moving on to everybody else. I hope that they've stuck around because they either felt hamstrung by the previous regime or they feel a sense of pride or perhaps shame about things that have gone on, and perhaps they wanted to usher in the new era. And if that's the case, great. Now go away. And we do need an ownership who knows how to run a business, even though, as everyone says, football is not a business in the traditional sense. But simple things like, hey, maybe we don't alienate our fan base slash customers. Perhaps we make it easy for them to spend money when they come. We'll like to make it a nice experience when they visit the premises. We want them to leave having had a good time,
So they
hopefully
come
watching
back.
them again soon. Yes. And this, none of this. Anybody who's ever been into any shop will know if you're made to feel welcome, you're more likely to come back. And I don't want to say it's been willful for the past 4 or 5 seasons, but at some point you start to think, is it me? Do they not like me?
What have I done wrong?
What have I done wrong? So the people who, having been unsure whether I should mention names, I'm going to mention names. Two of the people who have been mentioned as potential bidders are kind of unicorns, right? They're people with large resources, which in itself makes me suspicious because I don't know why anyone would want to come and buy a football club. One of them is the owner of BrewDog, which is a brewery of some description, I think. I've never heard of them except when they sponsored the Peter Crouch podcast a few months ago. I think the link to the area is very tenuous because apparently this guy's girlfriend is from Torquay. She's some sort of reality person.
Yes, I think she's a maid in Chelsea or something similar to
That's a
that.
thing.
But
Okay.
yeah.
I honestly, I've
When did
never
you
clung
leave
onto my
the
ignorance with such joy before. I had to Google this person and I was like, I still don't know who she is. Anyway, that's one person. And I think it's also worth highlighting that if it's not this person, James Watt, I think his name is. If it's not him, he absolutely deserves a medal for shithousery because he has been
Yes.
a bunch of Torquay fan tweets where they talk about the new ownership and like him just hitting that like button has got people all frothed at the mouth. And it's hilarious. Like if he ends up not owning the club, I think it would be classic trolling from him.
I mean,
And the other person, sorry.
maybe his tactics worked, because we did make a pilgrimage to BrewDog in Bath on Saturday and only had a drink,
I feel
spent
like
some
that's a
money with
lot
him.
of
So,
effort to get an extra 40 quid out of people. That's one
yeah.
round. And the other person whose name was mentioned was Chris Dawson, who founded and owns the Range chain of shops. I don't know what they do, honestly. I've seen them. They're one in Torquay, I think. He is from the area, he's from Devon. I think he was originally from Plymouth. There was a very grainy picture of a gentleman at the Bath game, and everyone felt it was him. Seems not to be the case. The latest news is that it was somebody else who is not believed to be associated with any kind of consortium. But again, Mr. Dawson has the resources that most of us can only dream of. Wake up and realize we only got one number on the stupid Euro Millions. So again, if he was to come in, I feel like we would be very well financed, which is also why I don't think it's true.
Yeah, it
I don't know about Obviously, I have no inside scoop on the preferred bidders. You know, we know of one bidder who was not the preferred bidder, and that's the consortium with Michael Westcott and the trust. If the administrators have felt another bid is better, then you'd have to hope they've done that in good faith. You know, if they feel that another bid perhaps has more financing to keep the club going as a concern for 5, 10 years, rather than a perception that the trust might not be able to afford its share. And we don't know exactly how it's being organized, but I'm optimistic that an owner will be found pretty quickly. I think we need to, you know, end of season is Saturday, contracts are going to have to be negotiated pretty much immediately. We don't want to get to June, find somebody in June, and then have a month and a half to get a squad together, because we did that at the playoff final 3 years ago and it was terrible.
Yeah, but the thing is with June has the AGM for the National League, and if we're still in an administration at that point, I think we'd get booted out of the National League.
Yeah.
So there's that threat around. So in the kind of there's definitely optimism that somebody preferred has been found, and the administrators believe that they could potentially be suitable for us. But it's kind of getting a bit nervy with timings, and we haven't really got that long to get these things finalised and in place, so that we can ensure we're still playing in the National League South next season.
I think that's, you know, that's why I mentioned the June date. I think, you know, every passing week is like, oh, is something, and these things take time. You don't get the call from everything. Well, you're the preferred bid, and you don't like, well, here's my sort code, take the money now. That's not how it works. But I not only do I hope that their ownership is in quickly, I hope that if the preferred bidder decides for whatever reason it's not for them and they back out, then the next preferred bidder can come in and get things done quickly, because we don't want to get kicked out of the league or the non-league, which is weird. I think it's funny. We're staying in this league. Well, it's not really the league, is it? And we've, you know, all of the crew here at Talking, oh my God, what's it called? Talking Talkie.
Yeah, get it right.
I didn't even do the other one. You know, we've all expressed at some point a hope that an ownership can come in and can re-engage the community, build for the future, maybe hold off on the stadium talk for a while. I think most of us wouldn't necessarily care who it is as long as they satisfy those requirements.
I think just creating better relations with the fans as the first outset, I think, is crucial to this new ownership, whoever they are. And if they're loaded to some of the numbers that have been kind of banded around, like these two people are, then we're well in, kind of thing. But if they come in and they don't set that tone immediately with wanting to have a community kind of in quotes based club, and setting up a youth scheme so that we can ensure that there is future prospects coming through, and we can benefit from that, then yeah, I think things will be in a more positive kind of, have a more positive outlook if that is the kind of outline from the get-go. But it needs to be kind of be sooner rather than later, because everyone gets a bit edgy with just like to know who this person is and then move forward on that. But
I think there's always a certain amount of caution, because you don't know who the nameless person is yet. I think once there's a name or a group of names associated with the ownership group, people will feel a little bit better, a lot better, I would assume. I think, and again, this is a conversation for another time, but I don't think anyone is expecting us to have a new owner and then find ourselves in League One within four seasons. Welsh team that wears red that is all the American people around me ever want to talk about.
I couldn't cope with that.
But you know, obviously we want to trend in the right direction, and I would hope that someone comes in with a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan, and at the end of which we would like to be here. And those things don't necessarily have to involve football. It doesn't have to be we want to be in League Two. I'd love to be in League Two, but I'd much prefer if the next 5 years are We're going to try and increase attendances by getting a lot more people from local schools to come, and we want to get them, you know, in all of the talk you got, we might open a little shop down the seafront to get tourists interested. We want to reach out to local schools and local community organizations and get sponsors and make the place a joyous place to go back to again, because Playmore's not a big ground. It's not even a particularly nice ground, but it's home. And when the people who go there feel like they're being treated well, it's a fantastic place to go and watch Yeoman football. And it hasn't been that way for quite some time.
No, there's so much potential within Playmore and the kind of the immediate surroundings kind of it, with, you know, the outside by the bowls club and on the green, and there's so much that could be done to bring either those young people in, the kids and whatever else, and having a food market, not a food market, but, you know, food, different trucks and things to offer something different, making some money on alcohol. I mean, I know some people will find that a little bit tetchy, but having the ability to take advantage of the rules of the league where you can drink in front of the pitch and take the money from that. I mean, obviously there'll be some criticism on that and not everyone will be up for it, but I don't see a problem with it personally. I think it's a good money maker, and that's and I think just, yeah, as you say, having that plan of, we might not necessarily be in League Two, but we'd have 3,500 in Playmore every single week, and then you'll have the club shop will be open for more than 2 hours a day, or whatever it is that it feels like, and there'll be a much more range of merchandise that you could buy. That kind of, it's just pure basics on that kind of side. But yeah, hopefully we have some news soon, which will be.
It shouldn't be that difficult to run a football club, excepting, of course, that you're not going to make millions out of it, right?
Yeah.
Any owner coming in is going to be like, well, I've done that money. And if they get a return, great. But most, I think even the trust, not expecting to see the 150 grand back. That's gone. And that's fine. And I think, you know, when you talk about a path to sustainability, I think there's been a conflation between sustainable and revenue neutral. That's not what I see as sustainable, is having losses that are bearable each year.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we lost 150 grand. That's okay. The trust raised 200. Well, that's okay. The trust raised enough to support that off, you know, that offset. And that's what I think. You know, you see that Exeter as well. Exeter doesn't make any money, but they have a trust who can support the club. And that's why it has to be well run. Because you don't have a huge budget from the fans to say, well, let's go and spend 75 grand on Leon Constantine. you know, let's make sure that we bring in players from our youth team. And that's where it becomes ever more important. And again, you see that up at the A38, how well they're doing with it. The bastards.
Yeah.
I actually don't hate them. I kind of admire what Exeter have done. It's annoying, but I think a lot of clubs should aspire to be what they are right now.
Yeah. It's this, well, the ambition, isn't it?
Yeah, next time we go to St. James's Park, we would absolutely call them a bunch of dirty northern bastards.
Yes.
Yes.
Deserved.
Yes. So I think we've covered the two games and the ownership issues. By the time this goes out, who knows? We could have a new owner. And it could be Tom. Maybe Tom's just soft-pedaling it, and it's actually Tom's going to be the new owner.
I had the lottery numbers on Tuesday.
Yeah. All right, well, now we've covered the two games over the past 3 days and the ownership thing. Let's talk about our victorious return, hopefully, to Playmore on Saturday, where we play two teams. We play Haviland and Waterlooville, who have already been relegated. I have no idea what's going to happen. We could show up and win 5-0, or we could easily get hammered, and I will not give a shit either way.
No, I don't really care what happens on Saturday. I'm not going. So it's kind of... I don't think, having been to the Havant and Waterlooville away game earlier in the season, actually, which I think was the last win I saw for Torquay, whenever that was before Christmas. So, yeah, I don't think Havant will have anything to offer when they come down to Playmore. So if they do end up battering us, then that would be quite something. But I don't think it will happen. It would be nice to have a full Playmore for those who will be there, as to kind of celebrate, maybe that's too strong of a word, that the season is over, and have them, and there be a positive kind of movement with the fans if there's a good number in there. But I don't. It's kind of a dud fixture now after Tuesday. We can sit back and relax, and not worry too much about what's going on around us.
I mean, it's absolutely a relief that we haven't got to get a result. Because
Yeah.
if we didn't win on Saturday, we'd have had not only had to beat Havant, but then we would be looking out for other results. Depending on what happens in the game that's happening right now, of course. But nobody needs that kind of stress. We've done that stress so many times. And nobody needs it.
Last season as well.
Last season as well. We're at the lowest ebb in the club's history for a whole bunch of reasons. I think it's worth remembering that we probably aren't one of the four worst teams in this division without the knockoff for the points deductions. We would be comfortably mid-table, which is not good. Let's not pretend otherwise. And I understand why people celebrate staying up. I understand why the players were celebrating on the field like they've won the FA Cup.
Yeah.
even though some people dislike it, I think these are people who have a job to do. It's been a tough job to do this season, and essentially they've allowed themselves to continue having that job in future, either with us or without us. You know?
Yeah.
I do think it was interesting that Aaron Jarvis was well up for the celebrations from what I heard on Tuesday, since he's been
unavailable. He ran straight on the pitch. So that dodgy ankle or whatever it is, or was that Dwayne?
Did he have bruised knees or something?
Bruised knees.
I mean, look, I play football not well. I've barely played for 6 months because I pulled a groin in September. So who knows what's happening with Aaron Jarvis' body, although pretty sure it's in better shape than mine. It's 20 years younger. But I think that's been an issue for us all season as well, is just the injuries. And we do need to make sure that a squad we put together for the future is going to be functional, and not just mean good, but able to play. Each player should be playing 30 games at least a season. If you're not confident you can get to 30 games, then we probably can't afford to carry you.
We're not, or you should join us in January.
Or join us in January. Or maybe have a contract where you only get paid if you play. So that game will be available on the radio. It won't be available on streaming because it's a Saturday, and apparently that's a big deal. Tom's laughing at the roll of the eyes I just did, because he's probably heard this rant several times before, which I'm not going to make now that I've said that. That's the main reason I want to get us into the National League again, because I want to be able to watch us every weekend.
The streams again. Yeah.
I'm going to ask you for a prediction, though, because having said 5 minutes ago, there's no way we can predict it, let's predict it.
Okay. I will go 3-1, Torquay.
Torquay. Well, I said 4-4 earlier on the prediction league
four,
thing.
4-4.
Because I'm not going to listen. I'm not planning on listening to it, so it'd be classic if I missed a classic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we are not going to keep a clean sheet. When's the last time we kept a clean sheet? I don't remember. But we had a 1-0 victory a few weeks ago, I think.
Hampton,
perhaps. Yeah. It doesn't happen often anyway, is the point. So it would be nice to have somewhat of a party atmosphere, you know, with the caveat that should we really be making a party out of this? I think the relief will kind of come out, especially with the crappy off-field season we've had through no fault of the players or the fans. Like, the off-field stuff is nothing to do with anybody except the people who have been running the club for the past 6 years. And while I don't always like the ire directed at people in football, in this case, probably deserved. I mean, I wouldn't be doing it myself because I'm not really Mr. Shouty, but I wouldn't be tutting at people if they were doing it.
It was quite a nice thing, a nice relief to do on Saturday at Bath. We did. There was a few renditions of some well-known chants. That was very enjoyable.
Yeah, it's cathartic, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know. So yes, so that's the pod for this week. We already know there isn't any other business because I asked that question at the wrong time earlier, and so you won't have heard it already, listeners. But there isn't any other business. So with that, I'm going to say thank you to Mr. Tom Beddoes.
Thank you very much.
And we will be back next week with a recap of the Haven game, and I would imagine some sort of preview into the off season. Thank you and goodbye.